Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Hey Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. Mashbi ani aleichem im lo tavo v'te'iduni shamar yishploni liten li matayim zuz velo natan arielu pturim shein chayavim ela tviat mamon kepikadon. So over here, he asks them to take a shvua that they don't know testimony to the fact that this individual had offered him a gift. He had gifted him money, but never paid out on the gift. So he wants these edim to come and testify to the fact that this individual actually promised to give him a gift. They deny having any testimony under oath. They are not liable for shvuat ha'edut because ein chayvim elo tviat mamon kepikadon. It has to be money which can be extracted like a pikadon. As Rashi notes over here, the person or the grantor who gave the gift, yachol lomor chazrani bi, he could change his mind at any time. He is not compelled to give the gift, and so therefore you can't have edim be held accountable for the fact that when they don't testify, that he's going to lose out on the money. He may never get the money, even if they do testify, because the gifter has a right of retraction. And even in situations where the gifter may not have a right of retraction, because it's a neder, like tzedakah, where he's giving it to a poor person, still over there, it's not as court enforceable as a normal monetary claim. Therefore, if the edim come and take a shvua, they're not going to be liable for shvuat ha'edut. Mashvi ani aleichem kishteida li edut shitavo v'tiiduni. He asks the edim to take a shvua that they will come and testify whenever they do come into testimony that is relevant to him. Arelu p'turim. Again, here you can't have a shvua de'edut mipnei shekadma shvua de'edut, because they're taking the shvua before they know any testimony. So they're taking a generic shvua that says anytime we know testimony, of course we're going to come and testify. If we don't, then we're going to be subject to this shvua, and then they are under supposedly this oath of shvua de'edut. The answer is that there's no shvua de'edut if there's no edut. You can't have the shvua precede the edut. Amad v'beit Knesset. He gets up in shul, v'amar, mashbi ani aleichem, shim atem yudim li edut, shitavou v'ti yiduni. Gets up in the shul and says, if anybody here knows edut, that they should come and testify on my behalf, and they take a shvua affirming that they have no edut, arelu pturim. Over there, they are pturim, it's not considered to be shvuat ha'edut. The Gemara will discuss what the problem is and what the deficit is. Amar l'shnayim, Mashbi ani aleichem ish ploni ploni, shim atem yodim li edut, shetavo v'ti iduni. So and so, please come and testify on my behalf. Take a shwa to the effect that you don't have any testimony. Shwa shein ani yodim lecha edut. They take a shwa saying that they have no testimony. Behem yodim lo edut. But they do know testimony. Either aid me pi aid, hearsay, not that they witnessed it, but they heard it from another witness. Or one of them was a relative or a disqualified aid. These again are not liable for shvuat ha'edut because they're not valid edim. Rabbi Tosafot asks over here, this has been in a number of mishnayot beforehand. What's the chiddush over here that if you're a karov or pasul or invalid aid, that shvuat ha'edut is not applicable to you? So what the Rabbi Tosafot suggests over here is that that's even in a case where you have multiple edim, 3, 4, 5 edim, and one of them is a karov or pasul. Just like when it comes to testimony, if miksat of the kat is pasul, it's posel the whole kat. So to over here, by shvuat ha'edut, that will protect all the other individuals from being liable in shvuat ha'edut, even though had they just dropped the karov or pasul, they would still be valid edim here. But since they are grouped together, and they are working as a unit, even though they could break off and have kosher edim, they're still considered to be pturim because of the person who is invalid to testify. Shalach biad avdo, o shamar lahen anitba. He sends with his servant, he makes him into a proxy, a shaliach, to go ask the edim to come testify on his behalf. Or the nitba, the person who is the defendant in the case, comes and says, mashbiani aleichem, shim atim yodim lo edut shitavo v'ti iduhu, that if you know edut for the toveya, for the claimant in the case, that you should come and testify, and they swear that they have no testimony, arelu pturim. Again, it's not considered to be shvuat edut, ad shishmeu mipi atoveya, until they hear from the claimant directly. for the person who has the claim in the case, he needs to directly speak to them. That means not through a proxy, like an Eved, even though Eved Kirabo, even though the Eved generally is an extension of his master, that's not good enough. You need the actual person themselves, as well as the fact that you need the Toveya, not the Nitva. So this is something that we've seen in a number of Mishnayot already, this idea that the Toveya has to be the one who makes the claim for testimony in order for them to be Chayav Shuvat Eidut. Now the word Toveya over here is somewhat ambiguous, because Toveya could mean the claimant in the case. But that means that Shuvat Eidut only have application in cases where an individual is demanding money and he wants Eidim to come to testify to back him up. But that means that if you have somebody who's a defendant in a case where he is now owing money falsely and he wants these Eidim to come to his defense and they will save him money, so there do you say that that is not considered to be Shvuat Eidut? Or is the difference here between Toveya and Nitva simply the person who the testimony will help? And that's what it means, Toveya. The Toveya doesn't have to be the claimant in the case. It has to be the one who demands the testimony. That the testimony will be beneficial to him. And therefore, even a defendant could come and ask the Eidim to testify if they're asking to testify for himself. Not to testify on behalf of the Toveya, the claimant, but rather asking for them to defend him in the case. So then he would be a Toveya in the sense that he's demanding the Eidut, not demanding the payment in the case. So the term is somewhat ambiguous over here, but obviously has large nafkaminot in terms of who is qualified to ask for Eidim. Obviously it's much more appealing to think that the Alocha would include both the claimant and the defendant, if you're going to cause them a loss of money by not testifying. But if you then read Toveya as much more literal, as claimant only, like most Rishonim read it, then it'd only be in one direction of the case that there would be Shulat Ha'idut. Tarabanan, Mashbi'ani Aleichem, Im lo tavo'u v'tiyiduni, Shamar ish ploni liten li matayim zuz, v'lo natan. Yachol yehu chayavim, you would think by gifting, they would be chayav if they deny that they have testimony that this person gifted or promised a gift to the individual. Tamalomar, techeta, techeta l'gzera shava. We have the gzera shava between Shvat Eidut and Shvat HaPikadon. Nemrakan techeta, nemralalan techeta. Malalan triat mamon. By Shvat HaPikadon, where it's speaking about a monetary claim. V'yeshlo. And he has the ability, as Rashi says over here, sheyesh mamon alav. He has the ability to make the claim and demand that it be paid out. Avkan v'tviat mamon v'yeshlo. So to over here, it has to be a case where he has a monetary claim that he can enforce. Not simply a monetary claim, not simply that he promised a gift, but something by which he can compel the individual to pay it. And that's the only type of claim that will be subject to Shvat Eidut. That's why the case of gifting is precluded, because that's not a court enforceable claim. Mashbia ani aleichem kishiteduli eidut. Tarabanan. Mashbia ani aleichem kishiteduli eidut. Shitavo v'tiyiduni. Yachol yehu chayavim. Again, you would think they are responsible if they deny testimony in this format. Tamalomar v'shama kol ala hu eid o ra'a o yada. So the order of the pasuk is v'shama kol ala, which is a shvua, v'eid o ra'a o yada, mishikadma eidut l'shvua. And he knows testimony, or he has seen something, or he has witnessed something. I mean that it's in the past tense. The shvua is about what already has transpired. V'lo shikadma shvua l'eidut. Not a situation in which the shvua precedes their ever becoming witnesses. So you have to have the information in hand when you take the shvua in order to be considered shvat ha'edut, or denial of testimony. If you only come into the testimony after you've taken the shvua, it's not binding on you. The Torah specifically says you're taking a shvua denying the knowledge of something that's already there, not denying that there will be information in the future that you will not provide. Amad, v'beit ha'kneset v'amar mashbi'ani aleichem. So here we have to know, what's the deficit when he gets up in shul and asks for everybody to take a shvuat ha'edut? So Amar Shmuel, afilu eidav b'nehem. The case in the shul is even when his real eidim are sitting amongst the congregation that is there. Pshita, that's pretty straightforward. Lo tzricha dekoi ilavayu. That's a case where he's standing right next to them. Ma detema kiman damar lehu domi. It's as if he's addressing them directly. Kamash malan, that is not the case. And now we have a braita, Tanya Nami Ochi. Ra'a si'asho bnei adam omdim. He sees a cabal of people that are standing there. Ve'idav b'nehem. and his witnesses are amongst them. V'amar lehem, mashbi'ani aleichem, im atem yodim li edut, shetavo v'tiduni. I am compelling you to take a shvuah, that if you know testimony, that you should come and testify. Yochoyu chayavim. You would think they are chayav for shvuah ta'edut. Tamalomar v'u eid, v'harei lo yicheid edav. And he is a witness. You have to designate or delineate the individuals who are edim. Yochol afilu amar kolom dimkan. Anyone who's standing here, tamalomar v'hu eid, v'harei yicheid edav. Over here he specified the edim. So the way that Rashi understands the specification of the edim is the nature of the language. It's not that you actually have to point out the actual edim. You can subsume them in a larger group, but you still have to designate the group that you are speaking to. In the first case, he just, in a generic sense, mashbiani aleichem. I want all of you to take a shvuah, but he doesn't specify who the all are. He just simply says, mashbiani aleichem, but never defines the group that he is addressing. And in the second half of the braita, he says, kolom dimkan. Anyone who's standing here, now he's already given delineation to the group that he's speaking to. According to Rashi, that is sufficient, even though he's not directing it particularly at his edim, but even at this group, it is a large group, but he's designated the group that he is speaking to. So according to Rashi, the issue is, are you just generically speaking, or are you speaking to a specific group of individuals? And yes, in the Beit Knesset too. Had he said, the congregation present, everybody sitting here, that would have worked. The problem was that he just walked into shul and said, Mashbiani aleichem, I make all of you take a shvuah to this effect. And since he didn't delineate the group that he's speaking to, that's what the failure is. And that's Rashi's reading of the Gemara. And similarly, when the Edim were standing next to him, the failure was, even though the Edim are right up against him, he just didn't delineate the group that he's speaking to, even though they're right next to him, and you would have thought he is addressing them because they are right there. But because he never specified them or the group around them, it fails. That's the view of Rashi. On the other hand, the Ran brings an alternative view here that the failure was not in what Rashi says here, whether you speak generically or you speak specifically about a particular group, but rather the word kol is the difference here. Whether he says kol or he doesn't say kol. Kol means all of you. When you use the word kol, then it works because then you have included everyone that is there. When you don't use the word kol, then you haven't included everyone that is there. And so it works out that it's not about the specification or delineation of the group, it is the inclusion of the larger number of people that are there. So according to him, the word kol is the pivotal issue, and not the delineation of the group that you are speaking to. Amar l'shnayim mashbi ani aleichem. Tanu Rabbanan. Amar l'shnayim mashbi ani aleichem ploni uploni. Im atem yodim li edut, shetavo v'tiduni, v'hen yodim lo edut, ein mi pe'ed, o sheya achad mehem karov v'pasul, yachol yu chayavim, tamalomar im lo yagid, v'nasa avono. Bireuin lahagadah hakatuv midaber. Im lo yagid, if you don't speak up, v'nasa avono. So that implies that you have an ability to do hagadah, you have the ability to give edut or to testify in the case. So that is the failure. If you don't have that failure, then you're not going to have shvuat ha'edut. So then, again, we saw earlier in the perek that there are actually two qualifications. One qualification is that you know testimony. The second qualification is that you're going to have impact on the case. And so now, even if you can have impact on the case, if you're not a valid witness, it actually will not work. And that is, for instance, they go into arbitration. And the individual says, I will accept these edim. So even though he accepts these edim, that doesn't mean that they're subject to shvuat ha'edut. They are valid edim in the case, not because they are valid edim, but because the other party accepted them as arbiters in the case, or that their testimony will be valid in the case. But that still doesn't change the fact that they're not kasher edim. So if you fail on either one of those two sides, you're not going to have shvuat ha'edut. If you're either a disqualified aid, then you're not going to be able to be subject to shvuat ha'edut. Or, even if you are a qualified aid, but you can't make a difference in the case, you also will not have any impact in the case. That goes back to what we discussed when there's a psul derabanan. There, the Baal Tosafot entertained the possibility of someone who doesn't have impact in the case would still be chayav because he's chayav midoraita. We saw the Rashba who disagreed with that and says it always has to be impact, and we saw other Mishnayot that seemed to corroborate that view of the Rashba. So that also means that in this case you need ru'uyim, lahagadah, and it means that even if they are accepted as edim in the case, despite their psul, that won't override the fact that they're not subject to shvuat ha'edut. Shalach biyad avdo. Tan Rabbanan, shalach biyad avdo, o shamar lehem anidva mashbieni alichem, shim atem yudim lo edut shetavo beti iduhu, yocho yuk chayavim, tamalomar im lo yagid, v'nasa avono. My Talmudo, what's the limud? So it's nice, you quoted the pasuk, but I don't know what this tells me about the fact that this doesn't work. I'm Rabbi Lazar, im lo yagid k'tiv. The pasuk, when it writes im lo yagid, it has the word written malay, which is glamid vav aleph. So that's like the equivalent of a Korean k'tiv. We have that many times, that the word is spelled lamid aleph and read lamid vav, or it's spelled lamid vav and read lamid aleph. So here you have actually a case where it's written as lamid vav aleph, so it has both words in essence written there, but it means im lo yagid, if you do not testify or give over what you know, benasav no. But it also says in there, im lo, to him. And that's what it means, im lo, lo yagid. If to him you do not speak, benasav no, then you will be responsible. Im lacher lo yagid, but to someone else you do not, then you are patur. So it is whoever is asking you for the testimony, im lo, lo yagid. If to him you do not give over the testimony or you deny the testimony, but it's got to be low. It's got to be to him. And without him, meaning the one who is looking for your testimony or the one whose the testimony will affect, then there is no din of shvat ha'edut. And that, again, could be interpreted to apply either to the toveya or the nitba. It has to do with just whoever is asking you for the testimony, low. If it's to him, to the one who's asking for the testimony, that you deny it, then you're going to be subject to the penalty. So that could imply that it doesn't matter whether it's the Toveya who's asking for the testimony or the Nidva who's asking for the testimony. As long as they are asking for the testimony for their own benefit, for themselves, that would be sufficient if you deny it to them. All right, next Mishnah. So next Mishnah deals with the Shemot Hashem. Mashbi'ani Aleichem, Mitzaveh Ani Aleichem, Osrachem Ani. So over here, he uses language besides Shvuah. Haru Elu Chayavim. All of these you are Chayav for. The Gemara will explain what the meaning of these terminologies are, or why they have an association with Shvuah. But here you have three different languages, which is Mashviani, Matzaveh, or Asrachem, and all of those are considered to be a valid Shvuat Ha'edut. Bashamayim Varetz, by the heaven and the earth, that's not considered to be a shvuat ha'edut. And you have to understand why there's a difference between the languages we said before and shemayim v'aretz. Ba'alef dalet, b'yud hei, b'shakai, b'tzvakot, b'chanun v'rachum, b'erach apayim, b'rav chesed, b'chol ha'kinuim, harelu chayavim. So if you use any one of these shemot Hashem, that whether it is a full-fledged shem Hashem, like Aleph dalet, which is adonut, Yudke Vavke, or Yudke, or Shakai, or Tzvakot, which are all Shemot Hashem, or you use the Kinuim, which are descriptions of Hashem, Chanun, Rachum, Erech Apayim, Rav Chesed, all of these are valid ways to demand the Shvuah, and if you use any of these vehicles for generating the Shvuah, then you're going to be Chayav for Shvuat Ha'edut. Now, underlying that is an assumption that the Shvuah requires Shem Hashem. That is a machloket rishonim as to whether a shvuah requires Shem Hashem to be deemed a shvuah, or you can have a shvuah even without the Shem Hashem. The Ran in the beginning of Nidarim discusses that, and other rishonim discuss it in different places as to whether the Shem Hashem is necessary by a shvuah. From here, it sounds like at least for shvuat ha'edut, you would require a Shem Hashem. Later on in the Mishnah and in the Gemara, it'll become a little less clear, and that's why the rishonim still argue about whether you need Shem Hashem. The Rashi sees as the Aleph Dalet and the Yud Kei as being a reference to the Adonut and the Yud Kei Vav Kei. They're just writing shorthand for it. Although we're going to see later on in the Rabbeinu Chananel that maybe even that Aleph Dalet and Yud Kei by themselves have sufficient Kedusha in them that they are actually what is meant by the Mishnah over here and not just a reference or a shorthand reference to Adonut and Yud Kei Vav Kei. Tosafot over here questions how is it possible that someone could take a shvuah using the shem yud kei vav kei when the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that a person who uses the shem yudkei vavkei hoge beotiotav is ein lo chelek leolam haba. Tosafot suggests shema kevin she'enu mitkaven l'shem mutar. Maybe because you have no intent of a shem, it is mutar. And since you don't intend to use it as a hoget Hashem, but rather in the context of a shua, then maybe that would make it okay. Hamikalel bikulan, if you use any one of these names to generate a klala, chayav, then you are responsible for whatever punishment is associated with a klala, divrei Rabbi Meir. That is the view of Rabbi Meir, that even kinuim get you into trouble when it comes to Mikalel. Now, Mikalel can be manifest in a number of ways. You can have Mikalel, which is Mivarechet Hashem, which is Kibul Hashem. You can have Mikalel Aviv V'Imo. You can have Mikalel Cheresh, which has application to everyone in Klal Yisrael. And again, there'll be different punishments. The Mivarech Hashem, Mikalel Aviv V'Imo is Motumat, subject to Skila, is subject to a death penalty. The Mikalel Cheresh is subject to a punishment of Malkot. So whatever the punishment is, Rabbi Meir says, any of these Shemot Hashem, if you use them in the Klala, then you're going to be held accountable for it. V'chachamim potrim. The Chachamim say that that is not the case, that Kinuim do not count. Ha'mekalel aviv v'imo, when it comes to cursing one's parents, Bikulan chayav. If you use any of these names of the Shemot Hashem, you're going to be chayav. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Again, this is the view of Rabbi Meir. Chamim potrim, because of the fact that it's kinuim and not the Shemot Hashem. Hamekalel atzmo v'chavero, someone who curses themselves or his friend, mekulan over belotase. In all of the names, then you are in violation of the lotase. Here, we don't have a disagreement of the chachamim. That's likely because the Shem Hashem is not mentioned in the pasuk. When it says lotikalel cheresh, it does not mention that it's a Shem Hashem. So now, the next line in the Mishnah has numerous girsaot. You can see that both the Bach and the Gra get involved in the girsa here. The girsa that we have in our Mishnah follows Rashi, which is Yakecha Hashem Elukim, and then V'chein Yakecha Elukim. That's the second line in Rashi. You can look in Rashi, and he says Yakecha Hashem Elukim, V'chein Yakecha Elukim, Garas V'matnitan, V'chein Katuv V'nakud B'seder Mishnah Mugat Davkanit. That's the way that it's enumerated, lettered, and punctuated in a really good version of the Mishnah. It's not clear here if that's me Lashon Rashi, or if somebody added that in afterwards, that that's why Rashi had said it. If he uses any one of these psukim, as Rashi says, in order to curse the Edim, Yakecha Hashem b'shachefet, if you don't testify, or Yakecha Hashem, k'gon she'ayachud korei kalalot she'batorah, someone's reading the Kalalot she'batorah, v'amal Edim, Ken Yakecha. Hashem should also do that to you, Mloti Eduni. Zui Allah, Da'aktivem, B'chola Lot Habrit. Because there it says, by the Tochecha, these are the Alot Habrit. And since they are subsumed under the word Allah, and the Pasuk by us in Shvat Eidut says, the Shama Kol Allah, so that means that Allah is an effective way to create a Shavua over here. That'll be the discussion at the end of today's daf, as to whether Allah and Shavua are synonymous, or there's something different between them. So that's Rashi's reading of it. Again, Rashi says you can do it in one of two ways. You can quote a pasuk, or you could say, just like somebody who's reading the Torah, it should apply to you. But already, if you look in Agota Bach, he changes the view here, the bet, which is found in Rashi, says, Yakecha Hashem, B'chein Yakecha Lukim Garsinan. So he changes it to Yakecha Hashem in the first case, Yakecha Lukim in the second case. And you can see that in the Ot Aleph of the Bach as well, that he does that in the Mishnah as well, Yakecha Hashem and Yakecha Lukim. If you look in Agota Gra, Ot Aleph, he says, B'mishnah Elukim Nimchak. He takes out the word Elukim, which would then back up what the Bach says here, that the Lashon is Yakecha Hashem and Yakecha Elukim, which simply means that you're cursing using the Shem Hashem or the Shem Elukim, not quoting a Pasuk. So according to the Bach and the Gra, that Girsa means that you're doing Yakecha Hashem, Yakecha Elukim. It's just two different ways to create the Klala using a Shem Hashem, and that's the equivalent of entering into a Shavua. If you look here on the side of the Gemara in the Masorta Shas, he says that it shouldn't say Yakecha, it should say Yakechem, because you're speaking to multiple Edim, you're speaking to two Edim and not one Ed, and therefore it should be Yakechem and not Yakecha. And then he brings a large piece here about whether it should have the girsa of Yakechem or Yakecha. On the other hand, others just simply say that it's Yakecha Hashem or Yakecha Elukim. They're simply using the term Yakecha, which is found in the Tochacha in the rubric of Allah, and you're using it with the Shem Hashem to generate an Allah. It's not that you're quoting a pasuk, you're actually giving an Allah yourself. So the part of the question involves what exactly is being said here. Are you quoting psukim, and therefore in quoting the psukim, you want to quote them properly? Or are you saying that you heard the pasuk being said, and then you're saying about that, v'chein, that you should also be subject to that Allah, that curse that is found in the Torah? Or are you saying that you're cursing using the Shem Hashem or the Shem Elohim, not quoting a pasuk? And so that would impact on how you view the girsa over here. Are you quoting directly the pasuk from the Torah and you're using the klala of the Torah as the klala? Or is it, when you say v'chein, v'chein means v'chein yakecha elukim, the way that Rashi is reading it is that also you should be subject to the same klala. The first one's a quote of the pasuk. The second one is, well, v'chein yakecha, Hashem should also punish you with that same klala. But if you read the second case as being similar to the first case, then you need it to be a pasuk as well. Or you're using the lashon of yakecha, which is a lashon of pasuk, and saying you should be cursed by the Shem Hashem, which is Hashem or Elokim. Zoi Allah k'tuvah b'Torah. This is the curse that is found in the Torah. That is what's meant by v'shama kol Allah. That's written by Shvuat Ha'edut. That's the simplest interpretation or reading of what is meant by it. And therefore, seemingly, it would work. So now, al yakecha v'yivarechecha v'yitiv lach. So what happens if he reverses the language and says, Hashem should not penalize you. Hashem should not strike you if you testify. Hashem should bless you if you testify. Hashem should be good to you if you testify. Implied in that is if you don't testify, that Hashem should not be good to you, or Hashem should hit you, or should smite you. Does that work? Rabbi Meir Michayev, Rabbi Meir says yes. Rechamim putrim. On the other hand, the Rechamim are puter. Over here it says, Rabbi Meir Michayev, Michlav lav, atashu mea hein. From a lav you hear a hein. Al yakechaim teuduni, v'lo teuduni yakech. You are inferring the negative connotation from the positive formulation. Rabbi Meir says that works. This needs some investigation, because when it comes to Tanai b'nei Gad b'nei Reuven, Rabbi Meir requires a Tanai kaful, because he says you can't infer a hein from a lav and a lav from a hein. Here it seems to be that he is of the opinion that it can work, whereas the Chachamim disagree. Right now the Gemara, Mashbi'ini Aleichem, Maika Amar. What is he saying over here? So the Mishnah gives you a number of languages which he uses. Mashbi'ani Aleichem, Mitzaveh Ani Aleichem, Osrani Ani. Am Rav Yehuda, Hochi Kamar. This is how to read the Mishnah. Mashbi'ani Aleichem, Bishvu'ah Hamura B'Torah. I am making you take a Shvu'ah like the Shvu'ah that is written in the Torah. Mitzaveh Ani Aleichem, Bitzava'ah Hamura B'Torah. I am commanding you to be subject to the command of the Torah. Usrachem ani biisur hamura Torah. I want you to be bound by the isur, the restriction that is found in the Torah. Which means that in each of these items, you are referencing to the Torah, and in the Torah, this item is found. And all of these languages are found in Parshat Nidarim. O yishavah shvua, zeh davar shetziva Hashem. Le'esor Isar. Ritva sees the Bishvuah Murabah Torah as a veiled reference to the Shvuot Torah that include the Shem Hashem. So you don't have to mention the Shem Hashem, because your reference to the Shvuah of the Torah is the equivalent of mentioning the Shem Hashem. It's as if, see Shvuot Torah. And in Shvuot Torah, you're going to see that it always has the Shem Hashem. And it's a reference to the Torah, not a reference to saying the Shem Hashem literally. Amalei Abaye, Elaha, Ditani, Rabbi Chia. What are you going to do with Rabbi Chia, who brings a braita that includes other language, which is Kobalchem Ani. I am, now the word Kobal can mean, come from the word like cable, which means to restrict or bind. So now Kobalchem Ani Elchem, Arielu Chayavim. Kobal Beodoraita Miktiv. Where do you ever find the terminology of Kobal in the Torah? Elaha Amar Abaye, Abaye says, no, you got to read the Mishnah this way. Achi kamar, mashbi'ani aleichem bishvua. I want you to take a shvua. I'm asking you to take an oath with this shvua. Mitzave'ani aleichem bishvua. I'm commanding you to be subject to the shvua. Osrachem ani bishvua. I want you to be restricted by the shvua. Kobalchem ani bishvua. I want you to be bound by the shvua or tied by the shvua. So in each of these cases, he adds the actual language of shvua at the end. The way Rabbi Yehuda had learned it was that it was a reference, a veiled reference to the Torah, and that veiled reference to the Torah is picking up. It's as if he's saying, see chapter this and posuk this, and you'll know that that reference is to a shvua. So I'm giving you a quote and saying, go see the reference in the Torah, and you'll know that that means a shvua. Abai rejects that because of the addition of the language of Rabbi Chiya, which is not a Torah language. And therefore it doesn't work anymore, because where do you look up? In the index, Kol Balchem, it's not found in the Torah. And so now you have nowhere to look, and there's no reference. So that's why Abaye rereads it and says, no, the Mishnah is saying that you're using these languages to bind the person by a shvua. It's as if the word shvua appears at the end of each one of these phrases. You are taking an oath, bishvua. You are commanded to be subject to the shvua. You are bound by the shvua. You are restricted by the shvua. That's the nature of what is being said in the Mishnah. And you can see in Rashi, he says, "Mazkirat Hashem be'achad mikol ha'lishanot alalu." That he mentions the Shem Hashem along with one of these languages, "Osrechem ani bishvua," and then he includes the Shem Hashem. And therefore, the meaning of bishvua, according to this, means "bishem Hashem," with the Shem Hamiyuchad of Hashem, and it doesn't mean the word bishvua. Other Rashbol thinks that means either the Shem Hashem or a shvua. Either one of them would work in this instance, whether you use the Shem Hashem like Rashi says, or whether you actually use the word Shavu'ah over here, it would also work. So now, we said in the Mishnah, Ba'alef Dalid, Ba'yudke, Bishakai, Bitzvakot, Bichanun V'rachum, Be'erach Apayim Rav Chesed. Everybody says that it works. Lememra, Bichanun V'rachum, Shemot Ninhu. From our Mishnah, it sounds like Rachum V'chanun are full-fledged Shemot Hashem, because they all qualify here for Shvuat Ha'idut. V'remini, Yesh Shemot Shenim Chakim, Yesh Shemot Shenim Chakim. There's certain Shemot Hashem which are subject to the restriction of being erased, and if you erase them, then you're Mochek Hashem and subject to punishment. The other Shemot Hashem which are not subject to that restriction of erasing them, you can erase them because they don't have that type of Kedusha. Elohim Shemot Shenim Chakim. Which names are restricted and from being erased, or have a demand that you do not erase them? Kigon, Kel, Elokecha, Elokim, Elokechem, Eke, Asher, Eke, this week's Parsha, Aleph Dalet, which is Adonut, Ve-Yud-Ke, Yud-Ke, Vov-Ke, or Yud-Ke itself, Shakai, and Svakot, Arielu, Einim Chakim. If any of these words are written, imbued with Kedushat Hashem, they are considered to be Shemot Hashem, and you can't erase them. They're subject to the restriction that's found in an interesting reading of a pasuk in Devarim, which says, "V'yibadetem et shemam." They have to wipe out the avodah zarah. Lo taseu kein Hashem elokeichem. Don't do that to Hashem, which means that you are supposed to wipe out our avodah zarah, not wipe out Shemot Hashem. So these names are all subject to that. Aval, Agadol, Agibor, Vanora, Hadir, V'chazak, V'amitz. Ha'izuz, Chanun, Berachum, Erech Apayim, Rav Chesed, Arelu Nimchakim. You can erase all of those names. The clear difference between the names in the first list and the names in the second list are that the names in the first list are inherent names. The names in the second list are descriptors. They are adjectives describing the attributes of Hashem. And that's the difference between a kinui and a Shem Hashem. That's what the Gemara is noting over here. How can you group them together in the Mishnah and say Shemot Hashem and kinuim all have the same din, when they really are different? Shemot Hashem have a particular din about being the Shem Hashem, and that includes not erasing them. That also includes about Shvua and other things, that these are the Shemot Hashem. Why are Kinuim all of a sudden okay over here? So Amar Abaye, Matnitan b'mi shechanun b'mi shehu rachum ka'amar. So here you can actually read it in two different ways. You could read this as b'mi shechanun, that it is speaking about the one who is Chanun, the one who is Rachum. That means it's a reference to Hashem using the attribute, but it's not using the name Rachum v'Chanun directly. It's saying Rachum v'Chanun means the one who is Rachum, the one who is Rachum. That can be implied. That's one way to read it. Or if you look in the Rabbeinu Chananel, It seems like that's actually what the guy said. Amar Abaye matnitin mashbi'am b'misha shemo rachum b'misha shemo chanun. That's what the Rabbeinu Chanan says. He actually said, mishahu rachum, mishahu chanun. So whether it's implied in his statement, or whether he actually states it that way, that's a machloket here as to what's being said. But in either case, it's a reference to Hashem, not to the particular name that is being said here, or attribute that is being said here. Amalei Rova, Ihochi, if you learn your way, but Shemayim Varetz, Nami. Why don't you read Shemayim Varetz in the same way? Shemayim Varetz, V'misha Shemayim Varetz Shelo, Kamar. You should attribute it in that way also. Either if he says, Mishu Sheba Shemayim Varetz, Shelo, or Misha Shemayim Varetz below Shelo is implied there, then that should work also. Why is it that the Mishnah denies that as being a valid way to express it? Hachiashto. How do you compare them? Hotam came into Lekka Mide Achrina Dikre Rachum Bechanun. There's nothing else that is called Rachum Bechanun. Rachum Bechanun are specifically used as attributes or descriptors of Hashem. Vadai b'mishu chanun, vadai b'mishu rachum kamar. Then definitely that's what he is saying. Hacha came into Ika Shemayim Baretz. Shemayim Baretz exist. But Shemayim Baretz kamar. Then you could define it as being Shemayim Baretz. You don't have to reread it. Here, what the problem is, Shemayim Baretz are a real existence. Yeah. And since they are a real existence, you could interpret it to be Shemayim Baretz, literally. Or you could interpret it to mean the person who created the Shemayim Baretz, or the person who the Shemayim Baretz belong to. But since it's uncertain, we're not going to automatically reword your statement. On the other hand, in the case of Rachum Bechanun, where we only find those types of descriptors or attributes associated with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then when the person uses that term, it's clearly a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The question is just what the meaning is. Does it mean Chanun Rachum as a kinui? Or does it mean the one who is Rachum, the one who is Chanun? And that is a reference to Hashem, and then you would satisfy the necessity for the Shem Hashem in that case. And that's what Abai says is the way to read the Mishnah. Now, Tanu Banan. Katav Aleph Lamed Me Elokim Yudke Me Hashem, meaning Yudke Vavke Harizo Enu Nimchak. Those names cannot be erased. He began to write a larger Shem Hashem, and then he only wrote a part of it. But the part of it that he wrote is also a Shem Hashem. So if you're writing Elokim, Elokim is a Shem Hashem. Aleph Lamed Kel is also a Shem Hashem. So if you only got Aleph Lamed and then you stopped, that already has Kedusha embedded in it, because it's a subset of a larger name that you were being Mikadesh, and in and of itself, it is a Shem Hashem. Similarly with Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei, if you have Yud-Kei, by itself is a Shem Hashem. So if you only get through the Yud-Kei of the Yud-Kei, Vav-Kei, that still generates a Shem of Hashem that is Kadosh, and you cannot erase it. As opposed to Shin-Dalet Mishakai, if you wrote just Shin-Dalet out of Shakai, Aleph-Dalet Me Adoshem, or the Aleph Dalet of Adoshem, Tzadi Bet of Tzvakot, Harizen Nimchak. Those can be erased, because those are meaningless words. Aleph Dalet has no meaning. Tzadi Bet has no meaning. Shin Dalet has no meaning. Truth is, it could be more than two letters. It could be three letters, four letters. None of these are Shemot Hashem, and therefore they are Nimchakim. You can erase them because they never attain the Kedusha. You did not complete the Shem that you were trying to write. And therefore, in this subset that is there, you don't have Kedushat Hashem, and they can be erased. So now, what's interesting about this is, if you read it at face value, it makes so much sense. The only problem is, if you look in the Rabbeinu Chananel, his girsa was slightly different, which was, his began like this, Tarabanan, Katav Aleph Dalet Mi Adoshem, Aleph Lamed Me Elokim, Yud Kei Me Yud Kei Vav Kei, Enim Chakim. He adds in one, he switches one of the items to the upper list, and that is Aleph Dalet Mitoch Adoshem. Aleph Dalet is meaningless. Now, how do you explain the Braita? How do you explain the fact that Aleph Dalet now is significant? Again, the way we explained it was very easy, the way we have it in our Girsa. The names that have subsets that are names of Hashem can't be erased. The ones that don't can be erased. But for the Rabbeinu Chananel's Girsa, who he says that even Aleph Dalet is subject to the restriction of erasure, how do you explain it? So the Balei Tosafot in the previous Amud explain, v'shema mishum d'shema miyuchadu yesh lachmir bo yoter. Since it's one of the unique, delineated, or designated names of Hashem, maybe that's why. So maybe Elokim, Adoshem, and Yudkei Vavkei are unique because those are the major or primary Shemot Hashem, and either if you only get a subset of them, are you restricted. So that's how Baal Tosfot tried to explain this girsa in the Rabbeinu Chananel, as to how it is that he has a different list that doesn't have the logic that we dictated based on the girsa that we have in our Gemara. Biosi Omer, Tzvakot kulo nimchak. Even if you write the entire word Tzvakot, it can be erased. Shelo nikra Tzvakot el Hashem Yisrael. Tzvakot is a modifier, not a name or inherent name of Hashem. Shenemar, Votzeiti et Tzivotai et Ami b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. This is from next week's parsha that Hashem promises that I'm going to take out my multitudes of B'nai Yisrael from Mitzrayim. And what the point of Rabbi Yossi is that anytime you find the word Tzvakot in the Torah, it's preceded by another Shem Hashem. It's Hashem Tzvakot, Elohim Tzvakot. Tzvakot is never a standalone Shem Hashem. And that means that it's a modifier, but a modifier that's not the Shem Hashem, it's Hashem being the Elohim of the Tzvakot, of the multitudes of Klal Yisrael. So it's a description over whom Hashem is the great king or the God. And therefore he thinks it's not a holy name of Hashem, and it can be erased. Amar Shmuel, en alocha k'Rabbi Yossi. Shmuel says, alocha is not like Rabbi Yossi. Now, that's not surprising, because you have here a dat yachid. He is a dat yachid against the Rabbim, and obviously he would say, alocha k'Rabbim, and his opinion would be discarded. So again, the Baal Tosafot, quote, Rabbeinu Chananel, having the same girsa as our Gemara, and they explained it on the previous amud, that their problem is, in alocha k'Rabbi Yossi, because normally, tamo nimoko imo. Gemara says in many places, Rabbi Yossi bar Chalafta, that his reasoning and the depth of his understanding is with him, that we will pass in the alocha like him wherever he appears. So he carries extra weight in his position. And sometimes we pass him like Rabbi Yossi, even against the Rabbim, because of tamo nimoko imo. And that's why the Gemara has to go out of its way here to tell you, alocha is not like Rabbi Yossi in this instance. Tara banan kol atafel Hashem ben milafanav ben milacharav arei zeh nimchak. If you have any addendum or prefix to the Shem Hashem, that is not considered to be part of the dusha of the Shem Hashem. Lifanav keitzad. What are examples of prefixes that are not kadosh? La Hashem, that La Hashem, the lamed is nimchak. Ba Hashem bet nimchak. Va Hashem, the vav is nimchak. Mehashem, the mem is nimchak. All of those prefixes can be erased. Shehashem, the shin is nimchak. Hashem, a hey is nimchak. Kehashem, a kaf is nimchak. So all of those where the prefix is not part and parcel of the name itself, but rather simply a preposition that is explaining the context of the Shem Hashem, that prefix can be dropped. And it does not have anything to do with the Shem Hashem, and therefore it can be erased even when it's attached to the Shem Hashem. Lacharav keitzad, what are examples of suffixes which can be erased? Elokeinu, which is the possessive form of God. It's our God. So the nun vav nimchak. Elokehem, the heim, it's their God. Again, it's that possessive form that is being added at the end. The Shem Hashem is now having a modification which makes it possessive in nature and defines who it's speaking about, that can be dropped. The hey mem, nimchak. Elokeichem, the chaf mem, nimchak. Acherim omrim, there is an alternate view over here. Lacharav, enu nimchak, shvar kidsho Hashem. That the successive letters, the suffixes cannot be erased because they are post the writing of the Shem Hashem. And the Shem Hashem gives them kedusha when they follow the Shem Hashem. They basically are mekadesh, that which follows. The prefixes are written before the Shem Hashem, so they don't get kedusha. But the suffixes that are written after the Shem Hashem, they do attain kedusha, and they cannot be erased. Amar Ravuna, alocha ki acherim. The alocha is actually like the acherim in this case, and suffixes cannot be erased. Kol shemot hamurim b'torah b'Abraham. Anytime the Shem Hashem is mentioned by Abraham. Now, obviously, we're not speaking about Yud-Ke, Vav-Ke. We're speaking about Adonut, Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. Because the Shem Adonut can be used in different ways. Ado Shem is a reference to God. Adonai is a reference to my master. And so you could use it in either way. Sometimes it's Chol. Sometimes it is Kodesh. And you can't tell. Only from context can you really tell what the meaning of the word is. And here, what Mara says is, by Avram Avinu, anytime you find Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yod, it's a Shem Hashem that is Kodesh, Chutz Mizeh, Shuchol. the exception of this one time, which is secular or profane, shenemar vayomar, it's obviously wrong to write yud yud over here, because if you believe it's chol, yud yud is a representation of the Shem Hashem. So it should be aleph dalid nun yud. It says vayisayna vayar v'nei shlosha anashim nitzavim alav vayar vayaratz likratam mipetacho vayishtachu arza vayomar ado Shem imna matzadi chen menecha al natavor mi'alav decho. Or it could be vayomar Adonai imna matzati chen v'enecha al natavor mi'alav decha. Question is he addressing Hashem or is he addressing the malachim? Abram is sitting outside his tent in Parshat Vayera, and the three malachim approach him. The question is, who is he addressing? Right before that, he was speaking to Hashem. Vayera alav Hashem belonei mamre. God appeared to him in Elohim Mamre. He's conversing with Hashem. Right after that, he's conversing with the malachim. The question is, Vayomar Adonai imna matzati chen v'enecha, who is he addressing? Is he addressing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or is he addressing the Malach? This opinion believes that it's Vayomar Adonai in addressing the leader of the Malachim. The problem is that he's using a singular form, and that's what is indicative of maybe that he's speaking to Hashem. On the other hand, this opinion views that he's speaking to Malachim. If you look in Rashi, Malach HaEmtzai Kara Adon. He's speaking to the middle Malach, and he calls him the Adon. And Rashi on Chumash explains that if he takes the leader, he assumes the other two will follow suit. So he picks the guy who is the leader. The leader is the one in the middle. Bolufanav Michael be'emtza, Gabriel mimino, Rafael mismolo, based on the Midrashim about what the missions of each of those malachim was. So he addresses Michael, who's in the middle. And he says, Vayomer Adonai imna matzati chen v'enecha, tavor mi'al avdecha. Don't pass by. Stay here and enjoy some repast with me. Chanina ben Achi, Rabbi Yoshua. Chanina, the nephew of Rabbi Yoshua. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Mishum, Rabbi Elazar Modei Amrub. They both say over in the name of Rabbi Elazar Modei, Afze Kodesh. This is also a sanctified name, which means that it's a Shem Hashem. Keman Azla, Ha, Damar Rabbi Yudah Marav. Gedola Haknasat Tochim, Yoter Mihakpalat Pnei Hashchina. That the mitzvah of Achnas Arochim supersedes greeting a Kodesh Baruch Hu, speaking to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Keman, who's that like? Koto Zug. Like that pair that we just quoted over here. If you read it as being Hashem Hashem, Im Namasati Chayinim Erenecha, Tovor Me'al Avdecha. He's saying to Hashem, hang on. You just sit here for a couple minutes, I'm going to do Achnas Arochim. So he puts God on hold. And then he goes out to do Achnas Arochim. You learn from that Achnas Arochim supersedes, is greater than HaKabbalat Pnei Hashchina. On the other hand, if you read it as being Adonai, as speaking to the Malach, then in that case, he's saying, dressing the Malach. He never dresses Hashem. Hashem might have left already. He's not putting God on hold. He's simply going out to do Achnas Arochim. Then you can't, from that, learn the lesson that you can put God on hold for Achnas Arochim. Now, this is going to parlay us into a number of statements like this in the Gemara, which are whether the Shemot that are found in certain instances are considered to be Kodesh or Chol. Kol Shemot Amurim Belot, Chol. Anytime the word Adoni, Adonai is used by Lot, it's referencing to the Malachim. He's addressing the Malachim. He's not addressing Hashem. Chutz Mizeh, Shu Kodesh, with the exception of this one, which is Kodesh, Shenemar. Vayomer Lot Alehem, Al Na. Here it's Ado Shem. This is Lot's request that when they're escaping the city, that he doesn't have to run into the mountains, but rather that he could go to Tzoar. Hello, Mitzarhi. It is small and it's new. Can't you spare the city of Tzoar? Now, even though the pasuk begins by Yomer Lot Alehem, which is clearly speaking to the Malachim, nevertheless, when he switches Al Na Ado Shem, he switches into the singular. It's what they're reading is, he turns to the Malachim and says to them, and then he turns away and speaks to God and says, God, can you spare Tzoar so that I don't have to run to the mountains and I can go to Tzoar? Even though God agrees to it and acquiesces, he still runs to the mountains in the end anyway, but he does make the request. The one who has the possibility of giving life and killing, the one who has that power, Zeh HaKodesh Baruch Hu. And that's why they believe that it is a Shem Kodesh and not a Shem Chol. So Marsha points out That Lailot, of course, we're referring to the Shemot of Alef Dalet and not the Shemot of Yud Kei. The problem is that there's only one case of Alef Dalet being used by Lot, and that's the one that we're saying that are Kodesh. So the Elizabeth Tzarachim, what the Gemara means over here, that all of them are Kol, except for this one. This is the only one, and this one you're saying is Kodesh. Kol Shemot Amurim B'Navot Kodesh. All the Shemot that are written by Navot are Kodesh, and that is even when they accuse him of cursing the king and cursing God. Now, Achab and Izeba were worshippers of Avodah Zarah. So when they accuse him of cursing God, which God are they speaking about? It's not clear. What the Gemara says over here is they were speaking about the real God. When it says that he did Kilulat Elukim, Elukim over there means God and not their Avodah Zarah. B'micha Chol. All the Shemot that are written by Pesel Micha are speaking about the Pesel Micha and not a reference to God. That when his mother says she sanctified the money to God, it doesn't mean to God, the real God, but to God, to a Pesel or to the Avodah Zarah. Lazar Omer, B'Navot, Kodesh. By Navot, they're all Kodesh. B'Micha, Yeshmen Chol, V'Yeshmen Kodesh. That by Micha, there's a mixture. Some of them are the real Shemot Hashem, some of them are Kodesh. Aleph Lamed, Chol. If it uses the same Kel or Elokim, that is Chol. Yud Kei, Kodesh. Use Yud Kei Bav Kei, that is Kodesh. Chutz Mizeh, except this one, Aleph Lamed, Vu Kodesh. That there's Aleph Lamed, and it's considered to be Kodesh. Kol Yimei Hayot Beit Elokim Vishiloh. That's almost like a narrative statement. All the years that there is a house of God in Shiloh. The house of God in Shiloh is not a reference to Avodah Zarah. That's clearly a reference to God. And there, Aleph Lamed in that story of Micha is a Kodesh name. It is the Shem Hashem that is being referenced to there. So Rashi quotes a number of examples there at the beginning of the story of Micha, which is, Vayomer l'imo elef umea kesef shelu kach lach, vat alit v'gam amart bozna yinei kesef iti ani lekachtiv. Atomer Imo Baruch Bini Lashem, which is Yud Kei Vav Kei, and then it says Vayashev et Elef Umeya Kesef Limo. Atomer Imo Hadeshik Dashi the Kesef Lashem Yud Kei Vav Kei Miadi. Devni Laso Pesel Umach Secha Vatashi Benulach. I'll give it back to you to go make a Pesel Masecha. And Rashi explains that she dedicated to Hashem until she gives it to her son to make into a Pesel Masecha. Vayashev et Kesef Limo Vatikachimo Matan Kesef. ויעשהו פסל ומסכה והיא בבית מיכיהו ואיש מיכה לו בית אלוהים ויעש אפוד ושרפים וימלא את יד אחד מבניו והיא לו לכהן. So over here Rashi quotes this as one of the instances where Elohim is Kodesh, and the Marsha says, I don't understand according to whom Rashi is quoting that pasuk, because there Elohim, if you say that it's Elokim, meaning Shem Hashem, the Tanakhama says all the Shemot are Chol by Michayel, and even Rabbi Eliezer agrees that when it comes to the Shem of Aleph Lamed, they're all Chulin. So why is Rashi quoting this Pasuk, Vayish Michalo Beit Elohim, Vayasevodu Trafim Aleit Yad Achad Mibanav Vayilo Lukoein, that there, Elohim, is clearly Chol, and so he doesn't know why Rashi is quoting it over here. Kol Shemot Amorim B'Givat Binyamin. All the names of Hashem that are mentioned in Pilegesh Begiva, with the battle with Binyamin, or Belazar Omer Chol. Belazar says all of them are secular, profane. Rabbi Yoshua Omer Kodesh. They're all sanctified. Amarlo Rabbi Belazar, v'chim avtiach v'enoseh. Belazar's proof is from the fact that they inquire of the Urim v'tumim three times. And the first two times, they lose the battle after inquiring of the Urim v'tumim. And the third instance, they do win the battle after inquiring of the Urim v'tumim. What Rabbi Lazar says is, how could it be that Hashem answers them in the Urim v'tumim, and then they lose the battle? And that is, in the first case, they say, who should go first into battle? And Hashem over there says, Yehuda should go first. So Hashem responds favorably to their question and answers them. Implied in that is that he's telling them you should go ahead, and then they lose the battle. How could Hashem answer them and then them lose the battle? The second request is, should we continue to fight against Binyamin? And Hashem says you should continue, and then they lose the battle again. The third time they ask, there the answer is yes, you should go and you will win. But that's the third time. What happened in the first two times? So what Rabbi Lazar says is, even though in the Parshiyah over there, in Shoftim, it uses the Shem Hashem, they were not really inquiring of Hashem, they're actually inquiring of Avodah Zarah, and that's why they got the wrong answer. They got an answer that said go, and meantime they lost the battle. And that's why he thinks that all the Shemot that are mentioned there are Chol, even though the names that are mentioned there are Yudke Vovke sometimes. Amalav Rabbi Yeshua, Mashi Yiftiach Chasa. You're just misreading the Psukim over there. Whatever God promised, He did. Behem lo bichanu, where they were not careful, imlin soach, imlin natseach, whether they were going to be defeated or victorious in the battle. Bachrona, in the last request, shebichanu, where they were careful, hiskimu al yadam. Then Hashem agreed to it, shenemar, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron, omeid lifanav, bayamim ahim lemor, hausif od latseit la milchama, in b'nei binyamin achi, imechdal. So it says there in Berachah, Pasuk Yudchet, Vayakumu Vayalu Beidel, Vayishalu Belukim, Vayimru Bnei Yisrael, Mi Yale Lanu Betchila LaMilchama, Im Bnei Binyamin. Vayomer Hashem Yehuda Batchila. Then if you continue in Pasuk, in Chav Gimel it says, Vayalu Bnei Yisrael, Vayivku Lifnei Hashem, Ad HaErev, Vayishalu BaHashem Leimor, Hosif, Lageshet LaMilchama, Im Bnei Binyamin Achi, Vayomer Hashem Alu Elav. So in the first case they ask, who should go first? Hashem responds, Yehuda should go first. The second question is, shall we continue to go to battle? Shall I enter into the battle? And Hashem says, go to battle. Once again, they lose. In the final request, in Pasuk of Zayin, Vayishlu Lu B'nei Yisrael B'Hashem, V'sham Aron B'rit Elokim B'yamim Ahim, U'Pinchas Ben Elazar Ben Aron, Omeid Lefana B'yamim Ahim Leimor, Hosif Od Atzeit HaMilchama Im B'nei Binyamin Achi Im Echdal. Should I go out to battle or should I not? Go tomorrow because I'm going to give them into your hands. So now, in terms of the questions, there is a progression in the questions, but the truth is that they never really ask the real question, which is, are we going to succeed in battle? The first they say, who should go first? Second time is, should I continue to battle with Binyamin? And the third one is, should I continue to battle with Binyamin or should I desist from battling? And then in the last request, Hashem answers them. So you could read, and that is a more likely explanation, is that Bichanu, is they didn't listen to the answer carefully. In the first case, the answer is, Yehuda should go first. Doesn't tell them whether they're going to win or not, just tells them who's going to go first, or who should go to battle first. Second case, they ask, should we continue to battle with Binyamin, or should we go up to Binyamin? It says, go ahead and go up to Binyamin. In the last case, where they ask, should I go to battle or desist? The answer is different. The answer is, go to battle because you will succeed. That was absent in the answers of the first two, which they were not careful about. Had they thought about it, they might have asked the next question. Are we going to win? Should we go out to battle and win, or should we remain here? The fact is that they were not careful or discerning in the answer, and that's why they got themselves into trouble. So if you look at the answers, then you can see a difference, and that might be what Bichanu means. Or you could argue that there is a difference in the question, which is that in the first two questions, there's a presumption of battle, and it's just a question of who should go first in the first case, or in the second case, should I just continue to battle? There's no two sides to it. On the third question, it's a question, should I continue to battle with Binyamin? Or should I pull back? To that, Hashem responds and says, you should go and you're going to win. And maybe the echdal, the addition of that other side of the picture, is what is being pointed out by Rabbi Yeshua over here, that they bichanu, that they were careful or more careful in the third time, and that's why they got an answer that was appropriate. And that's what Tosafot notes over here, shekubula nokta b'mechdal, el b'achrona dechtiv osif latzeda melchamayim b'nei binyamin achi imechdal. And that was the key difference, imechdal, which is, should I not go, or should I desist from going? And then Hashem's response would have to say, go and be successful, because they were really considering not going out again. So Tosfos HaRosh Shavir limits the statement to those cases where they inquired of Hashem by the Urim and Tumim, because in these instances, it's Yudkei Vavkei, which makes it a much harder statement. And the Ramban is really perplexed by that. He says, how could Rabbi Eliezer say that Yudkei Vavkei is a reference to Avodah Zarah? We don't find that. And therefore, the Ramban wants to say over here that the Yudkei Vavkei was a tikkun sofrim for Kvodam Shel Yisrael. That really they were asking or inquiring of Avodah Zarah, but they put in Yudkei Vavkei because of Kvodam Shel Yisrael. Even though the Ramban proves in other places that Yudkei Vavkei is used for Shemot of Avodah Zarah, like Azuchal Likro B'Shem Hashem in the beginning of Breshit, where there's a machloket as to whether that's a shame chol or a shame kodesh, and then again it's yudkei vavkei. So you do find instances where the shame yudkei vavkei is used in that way, although the Ramban sees it as being very unusual, and therefore gives this alternative answer as to why Rabbi Eliezer would say that the yudkei vavkei, that it is a shame of Bodhazara, and claims that it's more like a tikkun sofrin. So now the Gemara continues and says, Ko Shlomo hamurim b'shir ha-shirim kodesh. Anytime the word Shlomo is used, or the name Shlomo is used in Shir HaShirim, it's Kodesh, meaning that the way that Rabbi Kiva views Shir HaShirim is Kodesh Kodeshim. It's a parable, it is a mashal for the relationship of Hashem and Bnei Israel, and that means that the Shlomo in the Shir HaShirim is a reference to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, which is Shir Lemi Shashalom Shalom. That this is a song to the one who peace belongs to, Chutz Mizeh, with the exception of this, and we'll see what the exceptions are. So here we're saying that the word Shlomo in Shir HaShirim represents the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Machloket in the Rishonim, there are Rishonim like the Shuta Rosh, that indicates that Shlomo then becomes a Shem Hashem because Shalom is one of the Shemot Hashem, and therefore you would have a restriction against Mechika, erasing the name Shlomo here. So then the Ramban, the Ritva, others think that it's just a kinui, like any one of the other kinui in Hashem, and therefore it doesn't have an Isser Mechika, but it's about understanding what is meant in the Psukim as to whether it's a reference to Shlomo or it's a reference to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Now the exceptions are, Karmi Sheli Lefanai Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo, that the pasuk that says that the vineyards that are before me, 1,000 of them go to Shlomo, Shlomo Lididei, those are for Shlomo's own benefit, for his own palace. Umatayim lenotrimet pirio. And it gives 200 to those that tend to the vineyards. And they say that refers to the Rabbanan, which is that he took 1,000 for himself, and he left 200 to support Limud HaTorah, for Rabbanan to be able to use them to allow them to learn and have a parnasa. So over there, we say that that Shlomo is literally Shlomo and not a Kodesh Baruch Hu. V'yeshomrim, af zechol. Some say that also this pasuk that's found in Shir HaShirim is chol. Hine mitato shel Shlomo. The bed of Shlomo, shishim giborim, saviv la. So some say that that is also chol. The Gemara says, af zeh, velo miboye heyach. Also this one, but you don't need to mention the other one. Meaning, yeshomrim af zeh chol seems to imply that the first one is also included, because af zeh, also this. Af means like the other one, and the other one's not even a question that that definitely is chol. Can that really be that he believes both of them are chol? Over here, because we have a statement from Shmuel, and then we're going to run into a problem. Elahad amar Shmuel, machuta dekat lachan meshita be'alma, lo miansho. A kingdom or a kingship that kills one of six of their residents, he does not get punished. And he learns it out of the pasuk, Shneamar, Karmi Sheli Lefanai, Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo, Lemachuta Derekia, Umatayim Lenotrim Et Pirio, Lemachuta De'ara. So he divides up the pasuk and says that Ha'elef Lecha Shlomo is a reference to the kingdom above, which means that it's Shlomo there is Kodesh, and that it's a reference to the Machuta de Rekia, who rules over everyone. Ha'elef is to you. And the Matayim Lenotrim. And 200 go to the planters, which are the kingdoms below. Or in essence, 1,000 belong to Hashem, 200 belongs to Machut Dara. So if you take 200 out of 1,200, that turns out to be 1/6. And the king therefore has permission with regards to 1/6 of his population, either to kill them because they are Mored B'Machut, or to subjugate them to the point where they might have losses at a ratio of 1/6, Rashi explains that that is Angaria Shela Melech, Avudat HaMelech, that they are pressed into service of the king, working for the king. If 1/6 of them die in service of the king, that's an acceptable ratio. And the Balei Tosafot explains that that reference is to Milchemet Rishut, going out to battle, that those are reasonable losses in going out to a Milchemet Rishut. And that would be reasonable for the king to engage the Am in that such a loss ratio. The Marsha explains that Alef Lecha Shlomo means out of 1,200 people, 1,000 of them can be pressed into service for Shlomo HaMelech, and Matayim, 200 of them are dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they have to be left behind to learn. And that means out of a population of 1,200, 1,000 of them the king can press into service, whereas he has to leave over 1/6 or 200 of them to be learning Torah or dedicated towards Torah. And that is because the word Kerem or Karmi is a reference to Klal Yisrael. As you see in the Psukim in Yeshayahu, hey, that Klal Yisrael are compared to a Kerem. And in that way, the Kerem, 1,000 of them are dedicated to the king, 200 of them are dedicated to Malchut HaShemaya, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That means Aleph Lecha Shlomo is Kodesh. The problem is now, Shmuel, Deloki Tanakama, Deloki Yeshorim. Shmuel is not like the Tanakama, not like the Yeshorim, because both of them say that that is Chol. Elohi Kamar, you have to reread the Yeshorim to read like this. Yeshorim, Ze Kodesh, Vezehu Chol. Some say that the Aleph Lecha Shlomo is Kodesh, and that Chol is Mitato Shel Shlomo. Ushmuel Amar ki Yeshomrim. And then Shmuel is holding like the Yeshomrim, who says that Aleph Lecha Shlomo is Kodesh, and that Hinei Mitato Shel Shlomo is Chol. Kol Malchaya Amurim in Daniel, Chol. Anytime Daniel mentions the king or the kingdom, it's a reference to Buchadnezzar's kingship or kingdom. Chutz Mizeh Shu Kodesh, with the exception of this one, which is clearly Kodesh. So in Daniel, when the king is asking him for interpretation of his dream, then Daniel comes and says, "Dinach chelmau pishrei." This is the dream that the king had, and this is its interpretation. Ne'mar kadam malka, that will be said before the king. And then the puzzle begins, "Ant malka melech malchaya de'alaka shmaya malchuta chisna betakpa vikara yahevlach." So it's very hard to understand because it seems to be that he's addressing Nebuchadnezzar and saying that you are the king, Melech Malchaya, the king of kings, of the Lukash Maya Malchuta, that the heavens are his kingdom, he is the god of the heavens, Chisna V'takfa, he's all-powerful and strong, Vikaray Havlach, and has given you great honor. So it seems to be a reference to Nebuchadnezzar, but as Rashi notes over here, it seems incongruous that Daniel would call Nebuchadnezzar Melech Malchaya, the king of kings, because Nebuchadnezzar might be a king, but the terminology of Melech Malchaya, Dehu Elokadish Maya, that is a terminology that you would only reference to Hashem. And therefore, they believe that the word Melech over here is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not to Nebuchadnezzar. And the meaning of the pasuk is, Ant Malka, you are the king by the grace of the Melech Malchaya, Dialukash Maya Malchutach Hisnava Takfavi Karahevlach. And he's the one who granted you all of these powers and honor to be the king. And therefore they view this as being a pasuk that has a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not to Nebuchadnezzar himself. Yeshomrim Avze Kodesh. And some say that this is also Kodesh in Sefer Daniel. Shenemar, the pasuk says there, Edayin Daniel Dishmei Bel Teshatzar, Eshtomam Kishachada, Virayone Yivahalune. So he was silent for a moment while his thoughts were being gathered, and he was perplexed by his thoughts. Ane Malkov Amar, the king then addresses him and says, Bel Teshatzar Chelmo Pishrei Ayavalanach. Don't let the dream and its meaning alarm you. Ane Belshazzar v'amar, and then Belshazzar responds to him and says, Mari chelma l'sanach upishrei l'arach. My lord, would that the dream be for your enemy or its meaning for your foe? Meaning that I wouldn't be so upset if this was about your enemies. But the fact that it's about you is very disturbing to me. So now again here, when the use of the term Mari, the master or the lord over here, is that a reference to the king, or is he speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And that's what is the question of the Gemara here, is that Chol, is that Kodesh? So Yeshomim Avzeh Kodesh, Nemar Mari Chelma L'Sanach U'Pishrei D'Arach, L'Man Kamar. Who is that a reference to? If he's speaking to Nebuchadnezzar, who are his enemies? Israel. Israel is cursing Israel and he's saying, if it were only that this dream was about your enemies, that would have been great. Well, the enemies of Nebuchadnezzar are Israel. And what? Daniel would be cursing Bnei Israel. Tanakama holds, Sone Israel, Ika, Sone of Deku Chabim Leka. Meaning that the only enemies of Nebuchadnezzar are the Jews, there are no other enemies. Daniel could be referencing to the other enemies of Nebuchadnezzar that the dream should be for them and not for you because it's a negative dream. And that's why Daniel is perplexed, alarmed about the dream and doesn't really want to give it over to the king. And the king says, don't let it alarm you. And Belteshazzar, or Daniel, says to him, if it were only about your enemies, I wouldn't be so alarmed. But the problem is it's about you. So now the question is, when you're referring to the enemies, who are the enemies that Daniel is cursing? If it's a reference to Bnei Israel, then clearly it would not be a good thing that Daniel is cursing Bnei Israel, and therefore it must not be that he is speaking to the king, but speaking to God. So then that would be a reference to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that he's addressing God and not Nebuchadnezzar. On the other hand, the Tanakhama believes that there are many enemies of Nebuchadnezzar, and Daniel's curse doesn't have to be for Bnei Israel. It could be for some other enemy of Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, then we continue now in the Gemara. The Gemara says, "V'chol ha-kinuim harielu chayavim." If you use any of the kinuim, it works. That's according to everyone in the first case where we're dealing with Shvat Ha'idut. Veramini, is that really true? Itein Hashem otach la'ala ulishvua. It's a reference to the sota, that Hashem should make you into an ala shvua. Mata malomar. Why do you need that pasuk? It's already extraneous. Halo kovar ne'amar. Then the psukim already begin. Vishbiya kohen et isha v'shvuat ala. That he's going to take a shvua for the woman with shvuat ala. So why do you need the ala shvua at the end? That also seems to repeat what was said before. Vishneamar v'shama kol ala. Because by us, in Shvuat Ha'idut, it says, Kol Allah, Nemra Kan Allah, Nemra Lahalan Allah. Just like it says, Allah by Sota, and there it's extraneous, that Allah is coming towards the Shema Kol Allah that we find by Shvuat Ha'idut, Malahalan Shvua, just like over there, by Sota, it's a Shvua, Afkan, so to over here, by the case of Shvuat Ha'idut, it is a Shvua, Malahalan B'Shem, just like over there, it's using the Shem Hashem, Afkan B'Shem. So to over here, by Shvuat Ha'idut, it requires the usage of the Shem Hashem. Yitein Hashem Otach. There it's using the Yudke Vavke, it's using the Shem Hashem. And similarly over here, by Shvuat Ha'idut, there will be demand for the use of the Shem Hashem. You can see the Otiot Aleph and Bet here, that flip the Kan and the Halan in each of the cases, because the locus of the Braita is by Sota, and so therefore the Kan should be the case of Sota, as opposed to an argimara where we're speaking about Shvuat Ha'idut, and therefore the Halan seems to be speaking about Sota. So in the context of our Gemara, it makes sense, but the context of where the Braita is being lifted from, the language should be the opposite, and that's what the Aleph and Bet are noting. So now you have a Braita saying that you need a Shem Hashem in order for it to be a Shvuat Ha'idut, whereas our Mishnah said Kinuim would suffice. So Rabbi Lokasha, Rabbi Chanina Baridi, Arabonon. Difference is, Rabbi Chanina bar Idi and Rabbonon, who have different views on this. The Tanya. Rabbi Chanina bar Idi Omer, Hoyo v'amra Torah, Hishava v'al Tishava. The Torah tells you to take a Shvua. The Torah also takes you to desist from a Shvua. Kialel, you should curse, v'al Tikalel. And also tells you you may not curse. Ma Hishava b'shem. Just like when it tells you you can take a Shvua, it tells you to use the Shem Hashem. So too, when it tells not to take a shvua, it means with the Shem Hashem. And so, as Rashi brings the examples over here, the case of shava is shvuat Hashem tiyeh ben shnehem. That the shvua of Hashem should be between them, that's a shvua that is taken in court, and there's a shvuat Hashem, with the Shem Hashem. So too, alti shava is loti shavu bishmi lashoker, that you may not take a shvua in my name in vain, or falsely. So also over there, it's a reference to the Shem Hashem. Whereas if you look in the Rabbeinu Chananel, he says the case of Hishava is Vishbiya Kohen et Aisha, is a reference to the Sota, and Loti Shavu Bishmi LaShaker is the negative formulation. And the case of Makalel B'Shem, Just like cursing is done with the shame, af lo tikalel b'shem, so to not cursing is in the shame. Here Rashi says the kalel is itein Hashem otach le'Allah, quotes from the Sota, and that is a klala that uses the shame Hashem. So too, lo tikalel, whether it's kilalat Hashem, kilalat chaveiro, lo tikalel cheresh, elukim ba'amcha lo ta'or, if it's any of those references that it also includes the shame Hashem, or the way that the Rabbeinu Chananel says it, nemer kalel, ve'elo yamdu ala klala bahare vav, ve'esh yomim v'shama kol ala, which is our pasuk here by Shuat Ha'idud, ve'esh yomim yitein Hashem utach la'ala u'shvua, is the pasuk by the Sota, ve'nemar elukim lo tikalel, and it says elukim lo tikalel, or nasib amcha lo ta'or, or lo tikalel cheresh. So just like the positive statement about cursing uses the shame Hashem, so too the negative formulation also includes the shame Hashem. Based on that, Rabbi Chanina Bar Idi says that you acquire shame Hashem whenever it comes to a shvua or a klala, both in the positive formulation and in the negative formulation, and therefore he would demand a shame Hashem here, and he is the author of that braita that we just brought from Sota. Rabbanon, igmir gzer shava. If they learn the Gzeir Shava of Allah, Yibayi Shema Miuchad, then they should require the Shema Yuchad, just like by Sota, it uses the Shema Hashem. Sota over here, it should use the Shema Hashem. Ilo Gmir Gzeir Shava. If they don't learn the Gzeir Shava, Allah the Shvua, Hui Minolu. How do they know by Shvat Aidut, Veshama Kol Allah, as a reference to a Shvua? So Nafkalu Meditanyo. They learn it out of this Braita. Allah. Ain Allah, Ela Lashon Shvua. Allah is a lashon of shvua. V'chein hu omer, v'shvi'a koenet isha b'shvuat ha'alah. Where it says, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Hotam shvuat ha'alah k'tiv. It doesn't say shvua equals Allah. It says that it is a shvua through an Allah. It's a type of shvua that is an Allah. Hachi kamar. Allah, ainli Allah elu b'shvua. You only have an Allah that comes with a shvua. V'chein hu omer, so you see that an Allah is only applicable, only has application when there's a shvua. Here Rashi gives you the girsa, minayin lasot, shvua she'eni ma'ala, kishvua she'eshi ma'ala. How do I know that a shvua without an Allah is just as binding as a shvua that has an Allah? Tamalomar, vishama kol Allah, vishama Allah, vishama kol. The Pasuk says he hears a voice and he hears an Allah. What are the two different things that are being mentioned over here? One of them is a kol, which is a shvua. The other one is an Allah, which is a shvua ta'Allah. And that means that both a shvua and a shvua ta'Allah would work over here by the case of shvua ta'idut. Amar Rabbi Abahu, minayin la'Allah shehi shvua. We have a third way to learn it, which is Rabbi Abahu says, how do you know that Allah is synonymous with shvua? Shnemar, Vayavei oto ba'Allah. In Yechezkel it says about Tzidkiyahu that Nebuchadnezzar brought him into an Allah. Uchtiv, and then in Divrei Yamim it says, Megaba Melech Nebuchadnezzar marad asher hishbiyo belukim, that he had taken an oath in the name of God not to reveal information that he had about Nebuchadnezzar. That's the Agadic view in Chazal. Or it's simply the pshat is that he had taken an oath of loyalty to Nebuchadnezzar, and he violates that. And that oath of loyalty is termed in Yechezkel as Vayaveoto Ba'Allah, that he brought him into an Allah. So you see that Allah and Shvua are used interchangeably or synonymously, and from that you know that the word Allah means Shvua. So here you have three different ways to learn it, and they have implications because the way that Rabbi Chanina Bar Idi learns it from the Allah of Sota to the Allah of Shvuat Ha'idut, that Gzer Shava also says just like the Allah of Sota includes the Shema Miuchad, so too by Shvuat Ha'idut, only the Shema Miuchad would work, not Kinuyim. And that is expounded upon Rabbi Chanina Bar Idi's position in the fact that he says the positive formulations of Shvua include the Shema Hashem, and the positive formulations of klala include the shem Hashem. So do the negative formulations of shvua and klala involve the shem Hashem, or that basically anytime you have a shvua or klala, it involves the shem ha-miyuchad. The Rabbanon, on the other hand, say that you don't have to learn it through gzeir shava, but rather you can learn it from the fact that the word Allah means a shvua. Now, the truth is, it doesn't really mean a shvua. It means a shvua that includes an Allah with it. And then in the end, their limud is from Shema Kol and Shema Allah. So there's a Shvat HaAllah, which is the Allah part of it, which is shown to us from Sota, that there's a Shvat HaAllah. And the word Kol then is independent of that, which is a Kol without an Allah, or in essence, a Shvua without an Allah. And that's how they know that there's a Shvua by Shvat HaEidut. But if you learn it that way, then it's not dependent on Sota for the limud, because it's coming from the word kol, and that shvua will not require the shem ha-miyuchad. And then you have the last way, learned from Rabbi Abahu, who suggests that the words are synonymous. Allah and shvua are synonymous. And again, if they are synonymous, then shema kol Allah means that he heard a shvua. And again, there would be no demand for the shem ha-miyuchad. Kinuyim would suffice in that type of shvua. Okay, we're going to stop here. 8 lines down on the top of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph.